Welcome to
Naming It, where we discuss pop culture, current events, and how they relate to the way that we live our lives, all through the lens of two black psychologists.
Naming It is dedicated to acknowledging the elephant in the room, validating the lived experience of people of color. Coming to you from the Bay Area, California, we thank you for joining us.
I'm Dr. Bedford Palmer.
And I'm Dr. Lamisha Hill. Music on Naming It is provided by Lee England Jr., the soul violinist. Good morning, evening, afternoon.
Yeah.
Welcome to Naming It, y'all.
Welcome to Naming It.
All right. We got a special guest in the building.
We do. Don't look at me. Come on.
I can introduce myself.
No, that wouldn't be proper. We are joined this afternoon with Alicia Greenwell, founder of the Black Joy Parade.
Hello, everybody.
And a partner, artist in resident.
Gavin, how you guys doing?
All right. And so today did you say the number of the episode?
No, I didn't, because I don't really know what the number is. So I wasn't going to put it out there and get it wrong.
Oh, okay. So this is the holder of the number.
Look, I can look it up real quick.
You number the episodes.
I know.
Can I guess?
No.
Sure.
You can guess. You can guess.
Say 46.
No, we higher than that.
Exactly. I was going to say like 101.
I wish.
Oh, in between.
It's actually a really special number for my number. I have like numbers. I have a certain favorite number.
Episode
number 55.
Oh. 55.
Right. I like multiples of five.
Double digits.
That's my favorite number. Five is my favorite.
See? So can you help people that don't have favorite numbers understand why numbers are appealing?
Ooh, I wasn't expecting.
I definitely have a favorite number. Definitely.
What do you like about the number 5?
I was born on the 5th, January. Just always gravitated to that number.
I was born on the 10th.
Oh, okay. Oh, January?
Yeah.
Oh, Capricorn. Okay, yeah. Right. There we go. Happy belated.
I'm born in December. I'm a Capricorn.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Oh.
It's not just...
Virgo, and don't even come at me. Because we're the best.
Oh, yeah.
All the other signs are just there.
Okay. Oh, wow.
That's a real Virgo right there. Okay. I thought Virgos were supposed to be like more chill than that.
Yeah.
That was Sagittarius.
You are the best for something. You are the best Virgo.
I am.
What's your moon sign?
I'm a Leo rising.
And that makes...
Explains everything, right?
I mean, as a leader, as a creator, yeah.
It does.
All right. So we start out usually with shout-ins. Do you want to start us off?
I don't really have any shout-outs.
Nobody. What about you don't got no family. Nobody. What about your moms? You don't want to say hi, mom? Or okay.
It was just Valentine's Day. No? Okay.
No. Actually, I'll come back around.
So was a homeless.
My partner, he's wonderful. He got me flowers the week before Valentine's Day. Ooh. No need to get any more. You know, we already did that. And we didn't really celebrate Valentine's Day. But you had asked a question, Gavin, earlier about like what's your favorite Valentine's memory?
Yeah.
And I have to say, actually, what I always really appreciate, which comes back to both of my parents, is when I was a kid, my mom made a really special effort to get some gifts on Valentine's Day one year. I always remember I had this pencil with a lollipop on top of it.
Yeah.
Never forget that. And then my dad calls me every year on Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm. That is really beautiful.
That's beautiful.
That's awesome.
So I celebrate Valentine's with my parents, who love me the most.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully for folks who enjoyed Valentine's, whether they had like a person who they wanted to target that with, or whether they were just like giving themselves love, you know what I'm saying? And like, mm-hmm. you know, or if, you know, you just weren't feeling it, we're cool with that too. There was a thing, wasn't this Valentine's called Galentine's? Is that something that came up?
It's been around for a while.
Okay. I heard that for the first time this week.
I heard it for the first time, but it's not for us.
Well, maybe men just heard about it, women have been celebrating Galentine's for a while.
It's like, is this an unconscious bias thing?
No, it's not.
It wouldn't be a thing you don't know about.
Okay, all right, cool.
Growing Heinz, I don't know.
You know,
Valentine's
Day. Y'all can make apathy. Y'all can get together on Valentine's Day and celebrate. You know,
probably not as catchy as Galentine's, but
nah,
you have Valentine's.
You don't want to follow
Valentine's.
I mean,
Valentine's. Valentine's. Sounds like something else. I don't know.
You remember back in this, like TLC came out with "I Don't Want No Scrub," and then like some dudes tried to come out with a version, and it was horrible.
It was pigeons.
Yeah, and it was just stupid. And it's just like,
it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it's just like, you can't, if a sister comes together, if they come together and they put something together and it works well, we just need to say, that's wonderful. How can we help?
Right.
And get out the way. We don't need to be trying to, we need to come up with our own stuff. Right. Right? So,
I like that.
Yeah. So,
I don't want no pigeon. That's what
it was really bad. It was really bad.
I don't know why I hear DMX in my head like, I don't want no pigeon. I don't know why.
It's just, yeah. So I didn't mean to invoke that particular song, but I'm invoking it as instructional as to how bad it was.
Pigeons?
Who, DMX?
Yeah.
That is the most random rumor.
Isn't he like raised pigeons? Like
DMX? Doesn't he dogs?
He calls,
dogs?
Doesn't he call pigeons? Yeah, I think he does. Or
maybe it's Mike Tyson.
Ghost dog?
Maybe it was Mike Tyson that does that.
See, we're going to go down a spiral here. You said ghost dog.
Yeah, they take care of him. I don't know if it's DMX. I think it might be Mike Tyson.
I also heard, not to go down the pigeon rabbit hole or the pigeon hole or whatever, but I also heard that pigeons and doves are actually the same exact thing. Just different colors. If that's not some bias, they're the same bird, but just different colors. And doves, we think of like you release them at weddings, and they're like
so special,
right? They're related. There's like a religious connotation to doves, and pigeons are like street rats. Know what I mean? And they're dirty, and they're this, but they're just the same bird.
If you make anything white, it's better, is what I heard.
So they say.
But I think you have something different to say. I think there's joy in other areas, right? You know what I'm saying? Happiness in other shades and whatnot.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get back to the thing.
Did anybody else have any shout-outs? I said I didn't have one, and then I shouted to my parents.
I would like to give a shout-out to all the people who organize things for Black History Month. It is a lot of work. A lot of people get to appreciate that, but we rarely talk about the people who sort of like put in the extra time and effort to make sure that we celebrate a month that's so important and the history that we get to celebrate that comes with it. Yeah. Just like a little clap, clap, clap for all those people.
All right. Yeah. All right. For sure. All right. So here's some history about naming it. We also have a fan base, and they're particular. And so they've told us before to cut down on the intro. Okay. So I'm going to forego my shout out.
Okay.
Because I know that we're going to get a review and they're going to be like, yeah, we like you, but like, you know, we don't care that much. Everybody else is going
to
be.
You know,
in
sometimes you have to make things for yourself, right? You're a sculptor, artist. Yeah. Everybody ain't going to like it.
Mm-hmm. Not everybody likes the Black Joy Parade, I'll tell you that.
Oh, we are going to get into that. Oh, I want to hear about that.
That sounds like some people need to get dragged. I don't know. Because I love the Black Joy. I like
and
the
he's
Black
not
Joy
afraid
Parade.
To drag.
I got academic freedom. I don't care.
We will get into the Black Joy Parade. Yes. We have a whole special segment dedicated to learning more about it, the history and the foundation. Right. But before we do that, we're going to take a little break.
Take a little break. We'll be right back.
Okay,
so we're going to play the jams?
Play the jams, Bedford.
All right. So go ahead. Y'all do that.
What's going on?
Hey. No.
What's going on?
You just clip that and use that for the rest of the time.
All right. So what's going on?
So, Bedford, you picked out this article about some of our neighbors to the north in Oregon.
Yeah, there's some shenanigans going on, some problems, right?
Yeah, so the title of this article reads, Oregon official texts show police colluded with extremists.
Right. If I could just summarize what happened, there's basically been some protests that were happening in Portland, and these protests were these white supremacist alt-right people come out to Portland and they were going to tell everybody why they were right, of course, right? And then you have counter protests, and so there's the anti-fascist folks, and then there's just general like counter protesters, people who are like, we don't want hate in our streets kind of folks, like in Oakland, the Bay Area and whatnot. We have like signs that say, you know, we're not going to allow hate, and we put those everywhere. everywhere because of the people that come here at certain parts, certain points. So what people started to see was that the alt-right people were getting free rein and all the counter-protest people were getting beat up by the police. And so that's a narrative that, you know, has been put out in a lot of different spaces, and we're constantly being told that's unreasonable to say. How you're just believing that, but you're not, you know, you're not, you don't know the truth of it. You're just biased. The police are fair. We need to give them the benefit of the doubt, which is what they say whenever there's a problem, right? Well, texts were found that show that the members, high ranking, I think it's a lieutenant in the police, in the Portland Police Department, was actually texting a leader of that alt-right protest, telling him how to avoid getting in a space where the police were going to arrest his people, telling him that he wasn't going to arrest a guy who he knew had a warrant and thought that there was no need to arrest him, and warning him how to keep his guy from running afoul of other police who weren't in on it, right? And so now we're left with this idea that they tell us that we're supposed to trust everyone, right? They tell us that we're supposed to be able to go to the officer on the street and just trust them, and it's only bad apples or whatever. But when we say there's a problem, it takes someone finding a text, right, for anyone to believe that there were people who were being brutalized and people who were basically getting beat up because the alt-right has infiltrated these police offices, right? So that's kind of the article, and I'm just wondering, you know, that's something that's going on. Maybe we should talk a little bit about it.
I'm just curious, how do they get their number? Like, what is the backstory? What's the story behind that? Like, how they even, is it like the leader of the alt-right that has the number of maybe one of the sergeants or something like that? Or what's the, how are they communicating? And is it possible for anybody to have access to that number to text, like, police officers? Like, what's the story behind it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just going off the article. So, you know, we saw it. And so, I mean, from my perspective, I'm like, well, I don't got no, you know, though I actually, one of my cousins is in the police force. Uh-huh. And I do have his information. And if I was protesting and he was calling me and telling me, hey, man, you know, avoid this street, otherwise they're going to get you,
right,
you know, and we're going to take care of these other people for you and all this other stuff, then that would be inappropriate, right? Like, it wouldn't, it's just like, we shouldn't have access. We shouldn't be able to have the police tell us how to get away with stuff, yeah, right?
Well, that's collusion. In your case, that's a specific situation. It's kind of like, you know, that's your cousin. So you're able to have access to that information. That's what jolts me to ask the question. Maybe there's, I'm not really looking for an answer. I'm just kind of like posing the question, like, to think about this whole having access to police's
phone. I think that... you underestimate how easy it is to have access to the police. I have access to the police as Black Joy Parade.
Like, on the, like, but well,
that's a pretty personal access. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not like calling her at home, but like, I've had coffee with her before.
Right.
And if I needed something, I mean, any public event that takes over public streets that asks anything of the police, you have to work with them on it. Whether they're on your side and trying to support you or not is more the question, but the police, they're part of the public service, the way that city council people and the mayor is. And although they might seem like they sit in a white building somewhere, they are hired to serve people. Yeah. And therefore, when people need them, they are accessible to them.
Well, so, I think that's something that people need to know, then, that if they're going to go out there and protest, then they need to take that as an asset for them to, like, take into consideration.
Yeah.
You know, like, having access to, like, you know, their phone or stuff, that's big, you know?
I think there's a historical backdrop of this in terms of the challenges of policing broadly and the perception, the misperceptions, and the fragility of the identity of policing, because there isn't a, in Bedford, and we've talked about this on the podcast, there's not a consistent, like, standard of action and consistent and accountability across all these different departments. So as a member of the public, right, if I'm moving in one city or if I go to another state, right, my expectation argument of the police officers is that they're going to be same, right? Because they're essentially providing the same service, wearing the same uniform or similar uniform, and generally going about their duties in a similar manner. However, in reality, all the departments differ from space to space, city to city, state to state. Right. But the historical backdrop on it is essentially that, you know, my parents are both from Mississippi, and, you know, coming of age, understanding this relationship between the history of post-slavery and how policing in America, particularly in the South, was created, where they were essentially, you know, glorified slave catchers, right? Mm-hmm. And so you went from being an overseer in some capacity to being slave catchers to then being given a badge and a gun, being deployed against people who were protesting in the streets in these ways, and really being known members of the KKK, right? Mm-hmm. Operating at night with full reign and full authority, and then during the day having that same level of power to really, you know, be terrorizing, you know, members of the community. And so I think it's with that level of mistrust that we don't always have a full circle conversation around why policing in America is so problematic, because there are these like really problematic historical roots in a lot of communities of color.
I'm not here to spread rumors, but I was told a story by a very reputable source about the unions in Oakland specifically, and that actually the Black community and the police got along actually fairly well when the Bay Area was being established, because it was sort of the new frontier and everybody was coming out here without anything. Everyone had to make their own way and had to survive. And then what happened is the Bay Area continued to grow in wealth and population. They started bringing police officers out from the South, mm-hmm. because they couldn't staff it fast enough. And with bringing police officers from the South, you brought exactly what you're saying, police officers who were come over with a heritage, a history, mm-hmm. a legacy that wasn't the same as sort of the new breed and the new sort of relationship that the public had with police here. It was actually very similar to the South. Mm-hmm. And that's how you started getting to a lot of the issues that the Oakland police and the city have had since. Right. So it's exactly what you're saying. I think that there have been moments in history when we've had the potential to create a new kind of relationship, a new kind of foundation, but it seems like we can't help but bring over the negative legacy.
Yeah. And I think that there's this part about even on the West Coast, you know, like one of my favorite things that, you know, my late grandmother really enjoyed was like watching all the Westerns. And it's like it's hard to like watch those like black and white Westerns and see essentially, you know, these small towns where there's a sheriff. And what are they doing? They're terrorizing the Native American communities. And that was like television. And so these concepts of like where this idea of authority has come from places, if we don't really understand the historical roots, right, even if there has been changes over time, we're not, I think, being completely honest with that narrative. And we can't be, as many folks have like really kind of given this term, like ahistorical. We can't have like a historical amnesia when we're talking about current events and current problems that really come from and stem from some of these really problematic roots.
Yeah. You know, there was a report out that we'll probably put into the newsletter later, but there was a report the FBI found that they found that the FBI and other law enforcement had been infiltrated by white supremacist organizations, and that this was like an ongoing problem, and there's never been anything done about it. Like, it wasn't like there wasn't a purge. They didn't go find these people, but they just know that like within all these organizations, there's this white supremacist group that like kind of is working and operating in these spaces. And this is kind of evidence of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. So like, should we assume that this was innocent, or should we assume that this is aligned with the like you were saying, like the historical data and like what we know about this infiltration that happens, and what happens when you have differential treatment, mm-hmm. right? So it's, yeah. It'd be one thing if they were putting out bulletins telling like everybody who's involved in all the different protests, like, hey, this is how we're going to keep you apart. These are the rules. You know, if you stay 5 feet away from each other, no one's going to get in trouble. But, you know, that kind of stuff. But when you're just talking to one person, when you're just interacting with one group, and then the other group is getting beat up and your group isn't, right? Then it makes me wonder, you know, what's going on.
Right. And this, just the relationship and the presence of white supremacists in Portland. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in Oregon as a graduate student, and it was just this really interesting, another layer to that community in that space, where essentially they, like, the lack of honesty, you know, like now in today's times, you think of Oregon as this very green, this very liberal place, right? And they have a whole lot of problematic historical roots that they don't want to talk about. And they're still very, very much present. Mm-hmm. So even though, yes, it's very earthy, it's very green, vegetarian, you know, super no liberal. Fluoride in the water, right? Liberal by, mm-hmm. you know, sort of common extremes, terms.
Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Portland's small. Mm-hmm. It's a little island within Oregon, for sure. I mean, I know you lived up in Beaverton, probably, right?
Or I was in the south, in Eugene.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I lived in Portland for a few years too. And the minute you hit that freeway, it's a completely different world. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of cities like that, especially on the West Coast. You know, I think in the Bay Area, we sort of pride ourselves on the similar ideals, like we're progressive and we're this and that. I mean, you go to Stockton, you go to Fresno, and you easily get to places that are pretty red, pretty you know, right winged, and, mm-hmm. and not to say they're bad in any way, but I think it's very different. Mm-hmm. A lot of their center of gravity.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, all right.
Anything else going on that you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I think that's, you know, that was a thing that, like, just jumped out. I think some other stuff that happened, we talked in our last episode, we talked about how Kamala Harris had kind of jumped onto the scene, right? Mm-hmm. And was it like a week ago or so? Cory Booker kind of came out with his video.
Right out, right. Like a week later. Mm-hmm. Might not even have been a week. It might have been a couple days.
Yeah, it was... was it like during the game that I shall not...
The game that you shall not mention?
Yeah,
the game that Cap didn't play.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm pulling up on my phone my historical photo of me and Cory Booker. Cory's my first favorite political, you really? Know. Not I wouldn't call it a crush.
You did the other day.
Did I call it a political
crush? Who's the guy in Florida or Texas or Florida running? Also,
what's his name? Mono?
Hispanic guy, right? That's running.
I don't know what you're talking
Beto?
About.
Beto?
No, he's not running.
He's
Everyone
not
thought
running.
He'd run, but he's not running. I want to say he's like the mayor of Houston or something like that, Hispanic guy. He's done a lot of amazing work down there. You know, I'm rooting for everyone black, but that dude's also very legit. I can't remember his name right now, but yeah. I've heard him speak a few times, and I think it's going to be a really interesting race.
Yeah.
Very interesting race.
Yeah. You know,
the longest race ever. It's like 2 years.
Real yeah, tough.
They got in there early. They're going to be tired.
But you know, really California. Are, California is going to be a big deal because we got yeah. moved forward in the primaries.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Definitely. So it's gonna mean something because usually we're all yeah. the way in the back.
And everybody like, whatever knows we know what you're about to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I read a post from somebody on Facebook that said, "Why wouldn't Kamala and Cory team up?" And I felt some kind of way about it because I'm like, you never say that about mm-hmm. non-black. Mm-hmm. Candidates, right?
Right.
You just, it's a race. That's yeah. what it does. Like you work it out mm-hmm. and at some point somebody rises to the top and then maybe they invite the person to be their vice or, you know, there's all kinds of other options. But off jump, be like, why wouldn't you team up? It's like, wait, why do they got to team up? Like yeah. there's all kind of other people who aren't teaming up.
Right.
I thought it was interesting. I don't know what good or bad or what that means, but like interesting as a black community, why do you think that conversation has come up so soon?
Well, I think it's the same reason why, like, people go so negative so quickly on them. You know, like, we mm-hmm. talked last time about, I mean, the vitriol.
Oh, gosh.
You know.
I was around Kamala when she came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know enough about her history to confirm or deny those things, but just the mood around it was mm-hmm. not healthy.
Well, I think, like, and, you know, not to kind of go all the way back to that conversation, but I think one of the things is that we just find it easier to talk smack to crap on black women than we do on other people. Mm-hmm. Every person who walks up into that space mm-hmm. has like all kinds of stuff in their closet. You can't run for president.
You right? can't be a human without having
you can't be a politician without having like, you know, right. had to go
I mean like let's
misdirection
talk,
on some things.
Like just Barack Obama. Like if everyone gives I mean, I love Barack Obama. I'm all on his side and all that other stuff. But if we're gonna be honest about stuff, that brother threw like he threw a, his mentor under the bus, who's a black woman, right? Like when he was running and stuff, when he was going for public office, when he was coming out of community organizing, he just completely threw her under the bus in a really like nasty political way. And we just smile about it and say, oh, that's just politics, you know, but you have a prosecutor prosecute people and suddenly she's doing something wrong. And it's mm-hmm. like, we're not talking about all the other things. I mean, she did some stuff that even like, I would be like, I'm not cool with that. Right. But she also did diversion programs, and she also did other things that, like, anti-recidivism programs and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, you make such a great point in terms of, like, just the... And I think that's what we kind of want our namers to kind of just be on the lookout for. And mm-hmm. this gets back to, like, we had this whole kind of starting conversation on unconscious bias. Like, where is the differential, right? How are certain people talked about? How are they sort of... what is said about them, what is not said about them? And compare the rhetoric from person to person. And what is different about their identities, right? And just kind of, like, raise your awareness to that noticing. Because it'll be really, really interesting and powerful. And I think it's the subtleties that we don't always speak to that can be really impactful.
Yeah. So do we talk about enough stuff in the world?
Yeah, I think we did.
We could talk forever about all the stuff.
Right, oh, right. So much but we have such a wonderful guest with us today.
Yes.
And I think that it would be a great time to get into our real talk with our special guest. But before we do that, let's take a break. All right, so we're going to get into real talk.
Real talk.
So this episode of Real Talk, we are joined by Alicia Greenwell, founder of the Black Joy Parade.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Wow. Like, can I just say, like, thank you for the first, I mean, seriously, for real, thank you for coming. This is, like, huge. Went to the parade last year. I was like, this is a revolutionary situation right here. Like,
wow, revolutionary. Thank you.
Revolutionary.
Very much.
I mean it. Like, you, like, when you talk about, like, we're adjacent to Silicon Valley and whatnot, and we hear that word disruptive all the time and all that stuff. Like, you came in and disrupted this whole space around, like, why we would get together. I mean, like, there's parades, there's Martin Luther King Day parades, there's parades for Juneteenth, there's all these different things that people do parades for, but the concept of just saying, like, I want to do a parade because black is wonderful and I'm happy about it, you know? Like, I was just like, in Oakland? This is going to be in Oakland? This is where I live? I don't have to travel? I took a car over and just got out, and there they were. And there was these little girls with the little, they had the little joy, and they looked joyful, and they were, like, doing the little things with the, they had, like, streamers and stuff, and then there's some brothers on horses. I'm like, where y'all been at? You know what I'm saying? And I saw some Masons, and I saw, so I'm a little starstruck, you know, real activism, you know, we happy to have you in naming it. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate the recognition. And I actually love that you said that, because I think a lot of the people who you saw at Black Joy Parade have always been there. Mm-hmm. They just didn't necessarily have a platform to shine.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your work? Sure.
Yeah. So I am from Sacramento originally. I lived in Oakland for a long time, left for about 7 years, and then came back 2 years ago, about 6 months before I started planning Black Joy Parade. Mm-hmm. And I'm in marketing. That's my full-time job. I've always worked at ad agencies, big brands like Nike and Starbucks. So I think I don't know how to throw in a parade or do public events, but I'm a decent enough storyteller. So mm-hmm. I think that... in being in advertising, there's two things you have to be good at. And one is, like, understanding what people need and being able to tell their story for them. Mm. And that's what Black Joy Parade is. So I came back to Oakland, got off 19th Street BART and was like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, I don't, you know, because I had been gone for so long and I missed it. I missed the warmth and the belonging that I'd felt when I lived in Oakland before. You know, I'm mixed race and I grew up around mostly white kids, but even when I went to college and I had, like, a black community, there wasn't a lot of people who were mixed like me. Mm-hmm. And Oakland was the first time I really felt that. Like, I felt, oh, like, I'm not that unique. You know, people don't have to ask, like, what are you? Like, you know, that whole mm-hmm. thing that comes mm-hmm. with that. And then I came back and it just, I don't know, it felt different. Mm-hmm. It felt less warm. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of numbers around, like, you know, the change in demographics and housing prices and all this stuff. But I think if you ask a lot of people in the Bay Area what's changed, it's not a number, it's a feeling. Mm-hmm. And you can't quantify that feeling. You just sort of know, because the same way you know what belonging feels like, you know, right. You just feel it. And so I started sort of asking myself, like, what was going on, and realizing a lot of the organizations that you just mentioned were still there, still do beautiful things. They just didn't have a place to shine.
Right.
And then at the same time, I was went to like two back-to-back protests, which you named a lot of things, which a lot of them are marches. They're right. They're the intention of them is to fight against something.
Yes.
And it felt like, God, we need something to be sad about to be together. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a shame. Mm-hmm. And the Black Joy Parade was born. Like, could we get together just because we can?
Yeah.
Just because we're beautiful and creative and amazing and colorful and energetic and excellent and Black. Like, can we just have a party because of that? Yeah. And could I get thousands of people to come for that? The same way thousands of people come out when we're mourning.
Yeah.
That's the story.
You know, when you say that, it reminds me, I feel like that's like a theme that also happens in like Black families. Like, I remember in my family, we had this conversation about like not just coming around for funerals, you know?
That's and
like,
it.
Right? Like, we would only come around, everybody would be together, and we would pass and do all that stuff, but we should just come together. We should have family reunions. We should just spend time and be happy. And so, like, you've taken, it sounds like you took a real cultural structure in Black communities, and you've expanded it so that it's more of a large cultural movement, right?
I mean, let's keep it real. Like, we have a lot to be upset about as the Black community, the Black Joy Parade and me personally are not here to deny that. A lot of the things that we protest and march for, they're important. They're what allow a space to have joy often. Mm-hmm. But we should have time where nothing's asked of us. Mm-hmm. You know, we are amazing just the way we are, and we can come when we're not fighting anything else. We're just here to celebrate ourselves. So,
all right. I just want to follow that up with, because you had mentioned before there are critics. It sounded like there was a message to them, but could you talk a little bit more about like some folks who are critical?
I take it all with a grain of salt because it's not a good idea unless someone thinks someone hates it, right? That's sort of like a common knowledge, but absolutely. I think that there's a couple kind of critics. There's critics who feel threatened either because they already throw an event, because they feel dominance in the city. They have some sort of privilege or some space in the city that they think is quote unquote theirs, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just came back. People didn't know who I was. And then 14,000 people showed up and they're like, who's this chick trying to be in my space? So, you know, those critics I worry less about. I think they'll come around when they realize that actually this event and this organization is to benefit all. It's literally a platform to elevate what, you know, people are already doing good things. So if you're doing good things, like, you will benefit from this. There's no reason to be threatened. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's critics that they just don't care about Black people. You know what I mean? They just don't care about Black joy. They don't. Yeah. And those critics, you just can't give the time of day because, you know, if we spend all day addressing those critics, we get nowhere in life. So I kind of try to, you know.
Yeah.
Not put up blinders because it's important. You know, feedback is a gift, as they say. And we always try to get better and do better things. But at the same time, if there's people who are just going to sort of work against something that is unanimously good, you can't give them any attention.
Good.
So it is year two of the Black Joy Parade. And so if I could give a little reflection, I had shared this with you earlier, but I actually used to live around the corner from where the parade lines up. So when it was happening, it was like, what is all this stuff going on outside? Why are those people in the parking lot? Like, what is going on? I got horses, I got motorcycles, I got kids, I got moms everywhere, like, you know, doing, you know, some of the organizing for the children and the young folks. And then there was Bedford, like, texting me, you know, and I had just like, you know, put on a sweatshirt, walked outside. I was like, not really in the headspace for it, but it was really fun to get to see people who I knew, particularly from some different professional spaces, have that representation and see the youth. So I really enjoyed it and appreciated it in that moment. But I'm curious, you know, it's year two. Mm-hmm. So how have things either changed or grown? What are you kind of looking to kind of see in this next iteration?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see next Sunday how much it's grown. But it's actually grown by leaps and bounds. I think we have at minimum twice as many people in the parade this year as last year. You know, people found out about it. A lot of people didn't come. And so it's growing. People are also like one-upping themselves. You know, if they had a little routine last year, now they got costumes and their cars tricked out. And like, you know, they're really just like, they're bringing their full joy. They're bringing their full expression of joy, which is just so beautiful. And again, it's like when Black people have a space, like, they shine. So I'm really happy about that. The festival part has also grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, we've expanded the talent on our stages. You know, last year we we just asked people, like, what brings you joy? And we wanted to, like, bring it into the festival space. But we were, you know, not that big an organization. We didn't really know what we were doing. And so we had a few kind of activations. This year we have, like, a whole beauty section where you can make your own crown and get haircuts. We have a healing village where there's all these people coming to do, like, acupuncture and massage and talk about womb healing and just sort of, you know, healthy eating and practices and yoga and things like that. We also have a kid zone, Domino's. There's, like, Black Wineries, Hennessy. He's coming back to do their lounge, a skate park. We have this like whole graffiti thing. We have all these live artists doing stuff. Like, it's like once you ask people, you realize that A, the Black community is not monolithic, right? That people find joy in so many different things. And then once you just try to create all those things, then you get an event that isn't double the size by any means, but is definitely bigger than it was last year. So I'm actually excited to see it all come to life in so many pieces. I actually think we'll have a hard time focusing on deciding what to do when you get there.
Can I just ask a nosy logistics question? Where will you be during the event? Because it is a full-on procession, you know, from that starts on one end of town, ends downtown, like, and then, you know, the other kind of festival staging areas pieces. So, where, like, as one of the lead organizers, as the founder, where do you, like, operate so people, at?
Oh, go ahead.
I want, before, because I have a fantasy of that right now.
Yeah. Like, before
you
around.
Tell us the real, because, like, I see you at, like, the top of one of the buildings in, like, a penthouse looking over.
Yeah, there's not here.
Like, you know, you got,
like
computer monitors,
drinking champs, it all turned out.
Like, no, to the left. No, take that back. No,
yeah. First of all,
little like wires.
If I could afford one of those high rises in Oakland, that would be a whole other story. Yeah. Can't even afford that, right? That's a whole other
real talk
episode. And also, no, we're not that big. I'm not like over here chilling. So actually, it begins 3 p.m. the day before because we start building it. And it's actually the most beautiful site because you take just some random streets in downtown Oakland and all of a sudden, like, imagine the time lapse of it where it's just like, and you're building stages. And we have 133 vendors this year. And so we have to put all these vending booths out, run electricity for everything, like block off the streets. Like, it, the, my work begins in like supervising all of that as it happens. And then the morning of, so my cousin runs the parade part. It starts on 14th and Harrison this year. And we actually have, we're giving an award this year called the Best in Flow Award. And so we've raised $10,000. We're giving four organizations $2,500 each for bringing like the best choreography, the best ride, the best choreography, best ride, best overall. And then I'm missing one.
Dress.
Best outfit. Best outfit. And so we have four judges from the community, five judges from the community, and I'm going to be standing with them during the parade so that I can pick out, oh, that's them, that's them, that's them, so they can be able to do it. So I didn't get to watch the whole parade last year because I was running around like a crazy person, but I'm really excited to see the whole procession. And then I head down to the like festival part and I help the stage, you know, get everything going. And I'm on stage a little bit to just thank everybody. And then I kind of just like do what's needed, you know. I hope I can get a drink in at some point. I expect a lot of hugs. That's what happened last year. I was just like smiling and hugging the whole time. But when you're the founder, you don't have one specific job the day of. You have all the jobs at once. Anything that goes wrong, someone called. I do have a walkie-talkie. I was trying to get my team to give me a code name, and they would. I wanted to be like, you know, the president. We're like, the eagle has landed, and they're like, nah, you're not that cool. So we'll see. But I'll have walkie-talkie if you need to find me.
Are you gonna have like a scooter? Or like,
no. And actually, my sister and I, my sister actually like helps run the volunteers. She said last year she put in 50,000 steps in that day, which is like what most people do in a week.
Right.
So yeah, not scooter, but I definitely were wearing some tennis shoes. I'll tell you that. Yeah. If you find me, say hi. Yeah.
Okay. And bring a drink.
Yeah, and bring me a drink.
A bottle or something with straw. Yeah.
Like, so y'all, because this is going to come out the week before. So if you see Alicia out there.
Like, running and, around.
And if you look reputable, because if you look kind of, you know, shady, anybody going to drink
it. What does that even mean?
I'm just saying, like, your sister out there.
Okay, so maybe it's a closed beverage, bringing, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's bring a closed beverage.
Beer and walk
bring
around.
A gift that is closed.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Don't, yeah. You're saying people bring me drinks. Yeah. I don't need people to actually bring me drinks. I don't know. Do you have me out there with like a tray of drinks?
Yeah. Like, and a walkie-talkie, like sipping
one hand. Yeah, no, I don't know.
actually need a drink.
Sometimes you honestly, gotta pay.
I don't know about you guys, but I'll go to events sometimes and I'm like, I need a drink. This is boring. Black Joy Parade, you know, I don't even think about it because there's so many things to be happy about. Like having a drink is a bonus on top of it. But like you saw last year, like it's so joy. It, like you're just smiling. You're just so happy to be there. So
I mean, like, and so this is one of the things that we want. So I can't say how much my mind was blown by what y'all did. I mean, I went out there, and so the other side of the story with LaMisha was like, I was like, "Where you at?" And she's like,
"I came out of my apartment and put on a sweatshirt and some like raggedy Uggs. I was not going anywhere. Yeah. I was gonna stand on that corner and go back to bed."
Right. But she's like, "I'm at the parade." And I was like, "You ain't at the parade. You at home. You looking out."
You were the one in the window. Like,
You looking
out. I see your outfit.
No, I was cheering the kids on. You know, that's the story.
But I was like, I kind of came towards the back end. And I think there was like an event that I had to go to, and then like I came in and I was like, first of all, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I mean, like, you hear like there's gonna be a parade, and then like sometimes, like, I love our community, but sometimes we will do something and it's not like big. It's just like something, and it's like wonderful to see. But y'all were like, this was huge. And it was out of nowhere. There was no history of this. You know, it was like, wait, where did all these people come from? Yeah. You know?
And I had the same question that day. Right. I was like, where did all these, did you all get my flyer? Like, I was like, no. Right. I was like equally surprised.
Yeah. Like, I've been in the Bay Area for like 15 years. And I've, like, throughout the years, I've heard people say, you know, start organizations or start movements, but they like kind of like bubble a little bit and they just deflate and they turn into nothing, you know? But when I met Alicia and she was saying, "Hey Gab, I want to do a parade." I was like, "Yeah, that's tight." And then I was thinking, like, is this gonna be one of those things where it's like you're gonna start something? And I thought it was, you know, the same routine, but like lo and behold, like the whole, like, my mom was in the parade last. Mm-hmm. She had a booth in the parade last year.
She makes amazing Caribbean food.
Caribbean food, right?
Yeah. Oh, wait.
And so I had to
go ahead and give the
Shout out to Andrea McAdams for Shut Up and Eat. She does Caribbean food. She's gonna be in the year's Black Joy Parade.
One of 12 food vendors this year.
Yeah. So she does the food.
One of the only returning, so I appreciate her.
Yeah, yeah. She does really amazing food. But so last year I was helping my mom, but I had to get there early to like, you know, set up and stuff like that. And when I pulled up, and I'm like seeing police officers with walkie-talkies and like fenced off streets and stuff, I was like, what? And all I could do is picture you in my head, like, I'm driving like, dang, she really did this. It's really happening. It's a stage and everything. Yeah. So I was like, what? This like blew my mind. And in addition to that, there's like that unspoken dialogue amongst faces of people, like looking at each other like, yo, we're in this new space. What is this? This is dope. You know what I'm saying? I'm cool. You cool. You look fresh. There's like just a fresh feeling. Like there's all these other events that I guess you guys, you know, spoke about earlier. Mm-hmm. But when it's new and it's working, that's that feeling you get where you're just like, wow. And it's a safe space, like from beginning to end. Like, no, like I was telling a lot of people, I was like, you know what was really fascinating? We went, it happened. We went through the whole thing and then came out of it. Everybody was safe. There was no like craziness.
Of that, of 14,000 people, we had zero incidents, zero police incidents.
That's amazing.
The only person that went to the med tent was this guy who was working the bar and he cut his finger on a broken glass. That's the only person, which goes to show you, like, Black people, it's all love. You give us a good space where we feel like we belong. We feel that warmth. We feel that joy. It's all love.
Yeah. So from a psychological perspective, one of the things that like really attracted me to the parade and to the concept was like this idea that so there's a lot of ways to approach psychology, a lot of ways to approach life, right? And so there's this deficit mindset that people tend to focus on, like, especially when we're talking about Black people, like, they focus on what we don't have, what we haven't developed, what's hurting us, what are barriers for us. And some of those conversations are important, but like centering ourselves on all the negative things that could possibly happen, it's really just not a good way to live your life. You know, it's like, it's something we need to like attend to at times, but then have a good life too, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you speak about joy or when you speak about positivity or happiness, you focus and you center in that space, it opens up a whole nother dialogue that you can have, you know? And when we talk about caring for ourselves, right? And focusing on building ourselves. So it's no longer a matter of like coming in. So when I talk to clients and they come into my office and I'm like, well, this is what psychology is. This is what therapy can be, right? Therapy can either be you came to the emergency room and I'm going to help you fix that wound, right? So you hurt your knee, you come in, we'll slap some stuff on it and you go out, right? Or it can be like a personal trainer where you come in and you said, I want to grow in this area. And then I say, okay, I'll help you with that, right? And the crisis stuff is important. But the beauty of what we do, I think, lies in growing, in helping people grow into who they want to be. And I feel like what you're doing with this parade is it's like this huge joyful bomb that you're dropping on the community, right? That like is forcing people to look at that positive side, to seeing that smile, that look. You know, when I was walking through the parade, and I was there and I was like, I'm there. I kind of want to promote naming it a little bit because, you know, I'm just doing that thing. And I just got caught up with, I took a couple pictures and I was like, you know what? I just want to take pictures of people. Mm-hmm. And I took these beautiful pictures, and not because of my skills, but just because of the people. Yeah. Like the people were glowing, you know, mm-hmm. and I would just find another person and someone had like the Afrofuturistic paint going on, right?
And they send us Black Joy Parade all these, like, so the theme this year is Crown Your Joy. Sorry mm-hmm. to interrupt you. And send us, DM us all these things they're making. And I'm like, wow, people are about to look stunning.
Yeah. Yes.
Just stunning. I mean, we already are so beautiful when we try. We don't just step out the house in Uggs and sweatshirts. Yes, we bring it. It's going to be really beautiful.
I mean, you mentioned like kind of being like essence. Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe, because essence is one thing. Mm-hmm. The Afrofuturism movement, I'm wondering if it might find some sort of home in this, because like that was present and it's a beautiful thing to watch.
I mean, when you think about centering yourself around positivity, that is what Afrofuturism is. It's like, what is a world in which we didn't start a deficit, you know, mm-hmm. when we didn't actually, we're not chained down by all of the history that has, you know, mm-hmm. affected us. So yeah, I could absolutely see that. You know, I compare it to essence, and like when people ask me what's the future of it, I imagine it to be to Oakland what essence is to New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's an event and it's not just about the people in the Bay Area. We start drawing people in from other places to experience the joy that we've all created here. It can be really mm-hmm. beautiful. But in that same way, I think it has elements of Afropunk in that it's pushing up against the traditional narrative of the Black community, mm-hmm. and that we can start with joy and we mm-hmm. can start with what we already are and our beauty and creativity that already exist. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that it being born in Oakland makes it its own thing.
Yeah.
You know, it'll have a life of its own and be unique and evolve the way that the Bay Area does. So,
yeah. Yeah. Don't let me put in no boxes.
Don't let me in a box.
Yeah. There ain't no boxes here.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So we have a question that we'd like to ask everybody on the podcast. You know, naming it is dedicated to sort of acknowledging the elephant in the room, bringing out things that are not spoken, and being more explicit and intentional about those things. Mm-hmm. Are there any elephants that you would like to name, either where as it intersects with your work, things about your attempts to create space for joy? Are there things that you want to kind of call out?
There's probably a couple things. One thing that's heavy on my mind as the event approaches is that we as a Black community spend a lot of time, earlier we were talking about, you know, neo-Nazis and such, we talk about our tension between us and other communities, so the white community, mm-hmm. the police, etc. In throwing an inclusive Black event, you start to understand the tensions within your own community. Mm. And when I say that, I mean people who are from Oakland and people who are not.
Right.
People who are in tech, people who are not. Mm-hmm. People who are higher socioeconomic class, who are not. The LGBT community and the religious community. I mean, there are a lot of them. And I think we easily project about other, you know, there's Black people versus mm-hmm. inter other community there, right? Mm-hmm. Versus Black people.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, we're committed to creating an inclusive space because you know, Black joy doesn't, you know what I mean? This is like, if you identify as Black, you should be able to come and experience this beauty. But it is challenging. It is something we have to navigate as an organization, specifically on social media, specifically in the, you know, we are partner with so many different groups. I mean, at this, I think we have like 80 something people in the parade this year, you know, and they're all from churches to kid groups, to dance troops, to LGBT, you know, it's like all, it runs the gamut, right? And we have to be careful to make sure that everybody knows that this is inclusive and that everybody is down for that, right? Because the last thing we need is like us to encourage our community to be fighting within itself. And I just don't know that we talk about that enough as a community, but as an organization, it's something we deal with all the time.
Yeah.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's funny. I was just talking to some students about that because so I'm a professor here at St. Mary's and there's a Black student union and they have an African student association. And that's a new thing. And like trying to talk about, we were talking about how you navigate that and how you have to keep from allowing difference in cultural expression and difference in cultural and ethnic background keep us apart in some way, you know, and how like other folks try to wedge that, you know. So there's people who will wedge like the Black church versus Black LGBTQI plus folks, right? And it's not always in our community who's pushing that,
it isn't.
That push, right? So you even go into like the continent, Uganda, right? There's huge regressive, nasty stuff they're doing that's hurting people in LGBTQI plus communities, right? It's coming from white evangelistic, like rich people who are going into our spaces and telling us how we're supposed to live and not love our own people, you know? And that happens here, you know, and we rarely call them out. We just get mad at each other, you know? So,
and I think being, recognizing that, being conscious of it, of like, oh, that's, this isn't, there isn't actually a difference here. Like, let's not let this bring us, pull us apart. It's important.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to echo that point, which is like the parade is the glue instead of like the reverse of the wedge. It's like, it's almost like put everything else down for just a moment, just one day, for a few hours, so that the joy can come to surface, you know what I mean? And then, you know, the moment that you have where you're walking amongst each other, like, I guess there's always that unconscious bias that's happening with all the time, like in the back of your head. But when you're amongst thousands of people and you're just, you're permeating through these crowds and knowing that the theme is joy, that's the glue right there. You don't have time to stop and like what group are you a part of? What do you do? This is flowing. This is happening.
Yeah,
you know?
It does feel like a flow.
I feel like that's a great glue for all the different kinds of Blackness that's happening in Oakland, you know?
Yeah. I love that metaphor, the glue.
Yeah, Black Joy Parade flows. It flows. Like you in the space and you're just like, I felt like I was floating last year. I mean, I can't tell you how many I felt like a present. I was like kissing all these babies and like, I mean, they were just so cute. Like, and that's the really special part for me is like, you know, a lot of Black kids in the Bay Area don't grow up a lot around a lot of Black kids. And I didn't grow up around a lot of Black kids. And, you know, to get to go in the kids area and to see Black kids who live in like Half Moon Bay or something, right? To get to play with other Black kids, they rarely get to do that, you know, and to see Black love and to see all these different kinds of Black people that aren't, you know, a certain type, but like run the gamut and is so multifaceted. Like, that's what it's all about. That's the Afrofuturism. That's like, how can we inspire the next generation to start their whole life with joy?
Yeah.
So they don't have to have an event, you know, that they already know that they're starting at, you know, a good space. So.
Wow. I'm just, you know, I'm overwhelmed. I really, so I think like we're coming towards the end of the show. I think that what you're doing is amazing. I hope that it's going to continue. I think that I can speak for both of us when I say like, if there's ways that we can help amplify, or if you want consulting on Black, you know, if you want whatever, if you need somebody to move a box, you know,
I'm
what I'm saying?
A personal psychologist dealing with all the things I have to deal with.
You know what I'm saying? So like we can, you know, appreciate that. Yeah, it's just wonderful, and like being part of the community, being part of this vibrant, I'm gonna say an Oakland Renaissance situation mm-hmm. that we're like starting. I'm starting to see the beginning of, you know, or maybe we're in the midst of. Yeah. It's just a wonderful thing. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
the show.
Thank you. And everybody should come. It's the 24th, which is Sunday, next Sunday. Starts at 12:30 on 14th and Harrison, and it goes till like 7 p.m. There's so many things, so should I hope they to see you guys there.
Should they follow you anywhere?
Yeah, you can. I mean, we're Black Joy Parade on all the things, so you can just Google Black Joy Parade. Yeah, on the internet, on the general internet, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Black Joy Parade. I recommend Instagram because the pictures will be very beautiful the day of, to your point.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and we have a bunch of lead up events this year. We're doing brunches. We're doing, we had a Black women's brunch last year. We're doing a Black men's and Black women's brunch, separate events that will have like a co-ed thing because mm-hmm. Black men need safe space too.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want to come meet the team beforehand at some of our lead up events, please do.
All right.
Awesome.
Okay, so
that is it for this episode of Naming It. We want to encourage all of our namers and all of our listeners to please go ahead and follow us on our social media and look us up on our website at Naming It Podcast. Go ahead and scroll down and subscribe to our listserv. You'll get a wonderful newsletter. We'll be posting up all the links, the references, the articles, anything that you want to add. Where can we find you? Because your social media is lit. Where are you at, Bedford?
It's not as lit as I thought it was, but... I've been talking to some people who told me I'm using hashtags wrong.
Oh.
But so before we go do that, I also want to just let people know that we started a new Patreon account.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to support us as creatives, Naming It is, you know, we have our commercials sometimes where we're switching over and we're going to try to do a different way of doing that. But if you want to help support our content and you want to help make sure that we can kind of keep these seasons going, then please look for us, Naming It, on the Patreon site. It's patreon.com/naming it. And you'll get free content. You'll get the podcast a little early. You know, if you go to up a tier, you might get it with no commercials, because if you're paying for it, then why you need to get commercials, right? And you know, there's special stuff. We're doing video, so there's video of this, so you'll find that somewhere, sometime, somehow, when we figure out how to do that. But yeah, that's that little small commercial. You can find me at Dr. BF Palmer on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, apparently LinkedIn. I should be telling y'all I'm on LinkedIn too. I talked to a person who told me that I wasn't doing my stuff right.
I said all the things.
All the things.
Yes, but not as big as Black Joy. I'll never get as big as Black Joy.
I'm not as big as Black Joy.
Well, again, thank you so much. And to all of our namers, keep naming it.
Peace.